Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 1st of March, recording at 7:59 p.m. and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture audio outlook for the four main asset classes that we cover. Now, at first, let's just have a quick review of what's happened here, not only over the last week, but also over the last month, certainly in terms of stock markets. Now, at the beginning or at the end of January, and very much also at the beginning of February, the Fuller Money view was that after a wonderful rally, which began for most stock markets around mid-November last year, was overextended and certainly due for at least a healthy reaction and consolidation of those overall gains. And one of the interesting points about which we had a hopeful and optimistic view was that we would not see too much heavy selling occur during that period, but that we would see what in bull market environments is generally regarded as a healthy correction, where prices ease back and spend a lot of time ranging, and you don't get the white knuckle rides to the downside and accelerated trends that we have seen so much of in the last decade or more during this whole valuation contraction cycle. Well, so how did February do overall? I think the net result is really quite encouraging, in the sense that strong stock markets, most of the strong stock markets from ASEAN to the recoveries that we had seen in Asia, led by Japan, and also the United States, which is such an important influence on global stock markets, they have held up extremely well, as of a number of smaller markets, not least being New Zealand. Australia also has held up exceptionally well. Then at the other end of the spectrum, there are the markets that have seen somewhat larger falls. Those include Europe, although not many European markets have given up significant chunks of the recoveries that began entirely in the second half of last year. And the resources sectors have generally been underperformers here as well, particularly among metals. So it's been a mixed picture overall, and that's predictable. You usually get that during any correction that lasts in consolidation period that lasts for at least a few weeks. Some markets barely hesitate at all, and indeed some are actually seeing are actually still advancing, not least the ASEAN sector of stock markets. But you've seen that, we've all seen that before. And during some of the more frightening corrections that we've seen over the last few years in stock markets, the ASEAN indices were among the very last to give up their gains and then experience extremely sharp downward reactions. Will that happen again this time? Well, not if we see a performance that is more like the average bull market consolidation that that we get. But one needs to be a little cautious about saying that, because we have had a nervous equity environment for a good many years. We have consistently, at Fuller Money, Owen and I have consistently described this as a lengthy valuation contraction cycle that really began in 1999. And while we feel that we're in the latter stages of that cycle, we do not feel that we've actually completed it yet. And then there's that additional factor of the high-frequency algorithmic trading, which has contributed to what I've often described as slow-motion melt-ups, where we get these strong rallies that pull well above rising 200-day moving averages and are then followed by bungee jumps to the downside. Well, I'm hopeful that we won't see that again, but first we have to say what are the background factors that might help us to avoid that kind of downward reaction. Well, there have been a number of major improvements over the last year, and the first one is that Europe is regarded as less of a crisis. Today, Europe is regarded, I should say, as less of a crisis than has often been the case in recent years. Now, a key reason for that is, I think, the superb leadership of Mario Draghi. Austrian thinkers among you, Austrian school thinkers, I should say, among you, don't hold that against me, but certainly what he has done is pump a lot of liquidity into the system and used it on a carrot and stick basis with governments to get some of the cutback measures that he was actually seeking to help improve the overall situation. And I give him full points for what he's done to date, in the sense that it wasn't all that many months ago, in 2012, when people were saying that a breakup of the euro was inevitable and that it would be very messy, and that we would see some traumatic additional downside moves. Well, the downside moves that we saw were pretty substantial anyway, but I don't want to review that too much. Let's say, where do we actually go from here? I'd mentioned that Europe as a group and has really been leading during this reaction phase in stock markets. Now, that's not too surprising. We know that in terms of economic growth, that it's a vulnerable region of the global economy. And also, Europe had very strong moves to the upside as confidence improved, and not least because of some significant short covering, but also Europe had the best valuations near its near the nadir of its downward moves overall. And so, in addition to the short covering, it's attracted a fair amount of additional new demand. But the problem that remains, and indeed it's been the problem throughout most of my career, as I recall, is to say, where's Europe's growth going to come from? How's it going to generate its growth? Well, that's a less challenging question for the northern economies within the Eurozone, but it remains a significant problem for the southern economies, and they, under the single currency, no longer have the opportunity to repeatedly devalue to make their economies more competitive. Now, the solution to that problem, if there is a solution to that problem within the euro structure, is not immediately apparent, at least not to this commentator. And I think that's a problem that's going to remain with us here for some time. Although I think Mario Draghi is more optimistic on this point than most of us, and let's hope he's right, and I wouldn't bet against him on that point. Now, taking another region of the global stock market sector, which I think is particularly interesting, and that's something that I've really been saying for a good many years, is Asia. Now, we can't lump all of Asia together, that's for sure. But we can look at a number of these economies, and I feel that they're going to remain certainly interesting very much over the medium term, medium to longer term. And the best performers overall have been within the ASEAN sector, and those have been led by the outstanding strength that we've seen from Indonesia and from Thailand and also the Philippines. And I think we have to credit these economies with some significant improvements in overall governance, which have contributed to their success in recent years. Now, those are the stock markets that remain very close to their highs and indeed have been actually hitting new highs during February, but they are really quite overextended relative to their rising 200-day moving averages. Therefore, I'd be very wary in terms of increasing positions in those markets over the duration of this corrective process in most global stock markets. But I think they remain attractive for the foreseeable long term. Now, at the opposite end, in terms of performance, at least up until year-end 2012, three markets that had serially underperformed were Vietnam, China, and Japan, of course. Now, I think as far as Vietnam is concerned, and that's the one I know the least about overall, but still very much in the emerging market status here overall. One of the factors that had weighed heavily against it for quite some time was the competitive devaluation that it was engaged in. But that led to a reestablishing of their currency in a loose band against the US dollar, and that has held the currency relatively steady. And I think as long as we don't get another devaluation cycle, and I don't know whether we will or not for Vietnam, but provided we don't, I think that leaves Vietnam as being one of the recovery candidates for the remainder of 2013 and quite possibly beyond. The technical pattern can support a recovery move overall, and it's certainly not an expensive market. The big one among that mixed, or the biggest among the next two big economies and markets, is China. And China's at this interesting stage where the decennial power change is actually underway. And I think it's completed within, it's certainly completed, I believe, in this month, March. But the challenges are actually quite considerable, and they have, if anything, in my own thinking, the challenges have actually increased. And there are two factors that I would cite here. First is that we have seen, China has seen another flare-up in terms of property price speculation. And that's been a major concern for a long time. It's something that the government has tried to tackle and should be credited with tackling, but it has not resolved the problem. And therefore, it's introduced new measures that we've commented on and that I'm sure you've read about elsewhere if you've been following this, that to make it more difficult for speculators in particularly in the residential property markets. And that, of course, is a form of monetary tightening, and it did create concerns that that might be spreading across all of the, or a significant portion of China's economy, and would not, or was impossible to restrict entirely to just the property market. Well, we will see. I think that the government can point out that it will continue to try to curb property speculation, but while it is also trying to increase the overall growth rate within within China, GDP growth rate within China. Now, a potentially more serious problem that I think everyone became aware of around the turn of the year was the problem of air pollution in China. And we haven't seen this problem on the same scale, just as we haven't seen growth of China's nature over the last three decades at any time, I think, probably in human history. And it's been an extraordinary development, with China going from a severely underdeveloped economy during the Mao years to the global manufacturing powerhouse that it is today, and with an increasing number of gleaming new cities. So it's an amazing achievement, and the standard of living in China has risen really quite dramatically. But there's a black humor joke in China, which ruefully states, the only thing China's elite share with the masses is dirty air. And that is a serious problem. Air pollution in China is an appalling health hazard. And if you've been to Hong Kong or into the regions of China where so much of their industrial activity takes place, or in Beijing, you will have seen this problem and or experienced this problem. And if you haven't, you've certainly read about it and seen it in some of the media presentations on the subject. But it is an appalling health hazard. And that's something that China is belatedly tackling. But there's a bit of a catch-22 situation involved in all this, because policies to reduce pollution, which are certainly to be welcomed and are positive and beneficial to the economy over the longer term, they're also likely to curb GDP growth somewhat in the short term. For instance, that would involve the removal of coal, and China does not yet have as cheap alternatives to use in its energy demands, because it's been holding back, not wanting to completely disrupt the coal industry, and therefore it hasn't developed its shale gas in particular at the pace that would have helped to resolve this problem. And so then inefficient manufacturers, of which there are there are many, any closing down of those operations would not be promoting GDP growth in the short term. So this is a difficult transition phase and a challenge for the new administration, which is taking over. Nevertheless, we can say today that China still has an enviable national balance sheet and an enviable growth rate by global standards. And I think that's likely to remain the case overall, But if there are serious doubts and concerns, I think the main one, in my opinion, right now, has to be how they actually resolve this pollution problem in the well, for the for the for the for the good of all, really. Now, the other economy that I want to talk about specifically in Asia is Japan. And I would say that this is really the most interesting investment play of all. And it is due entirely, of course, to the arrival of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe on the scene, determined to break the deflation cycle, disinflation and deflation cycle, and to weaken what Fuller Money had said was a chronically overvalued yen for a number of years, to weaken the Japanese yen and to revive global GDP growth. Well, there were a lot of naysayers who said, well, he couldn't do it, and it would all he wouldn't get anywhere with the BOJ. But he's solved that problem and has now been able to appoint his own allies in terms of monetary policy at the Bank of Japan. And as I look at the yen, in the last few days, I'd been concerned because the yen had firmed up a little bit. But I look today, and I'll mention it in US dollar terms, as I usually do, but the dollar's trading at 93.58 yen as I actually speak. And I think around 94.5, I believe, is the high that approximately the high that we've seen on this overall move for the Japanese currency. In talking about where this is actually going to go, my own view is that we're going to see a further weakening of the yen. That's what Shinzo Abe would like to see, and I think he's got plenty of allies on his side, not least a good many of the industrialists who run the export companies. I would say they're without exception, they will be on his side right now. He's has a strong position in the overall polls, and as long as that remains the case, as long as the Shinzo Abe government remains popular, then I think Japan is going to be one of the top money-making opportunities that that we've actually seen. Now, for a long time, or really since the beginning of this move to the upside, we felt that and advocated having a short yen position because your gains were going to be considerably higher if that was the case. I think that's probably still a reasonable policy at this time, but I wouldn't be as aggressive at this stage because I think what we're likely to see is more of a ranging, more slowly declining yen overall. I don't think we're going to get anything like a free fall in the Japanese currency, which we sometimes see with weakening currencies. And the main reason we won't see that is because I think that Japan's economic performance is going to be improving rather than deteriorating, and therefore that will attract more investment into Japan. But I think the yen printing and the efforts by the government and the BOJ to massage it lower will actually continue. And here we are, 93 and 58. I would think to see 100 or perhaps even above would not be unreasonable here over the next year or more, year or two, I'll say. And therefore, again, on the qualification that provided the Shinzo Abe government remains popular, and I think it will, for the foreseeable future, then Japan may well be the outstanding performer among big economy stock markets and among most stock markets generally. And you've probably seen some of the number crunching on the impact that these moves are having on the earnings outlook, particularly for export companies. And, well, they take one's breath away. And, of course, it won't just be the manufacturing companies that will benefit. I mean, hopefully this reinvigorates the entire Japanese economy. And that's something that the United States would certainly like to see. And quite possibly, and this may be somewhat unfair on from my standpoint, but I'll say it anyway. I don't think it is, but probably the only country that is not keen to see Japan flourish again is China. Now, what about the European markets overall? I think probably Eastern Europe is going to be an interesting area as over the next few years as the global economy actually recovers. And take Poland as a leading country and economy within the region. My feeling is that, and my feeling all along as far as the Eurozone is concerned, has been that as long as those countries wanted to retain the single currency, then the single currency would certainly survive. And I don't see anyone talking here anymore about wishing to leave the euro or the collapse of the euro. So again, this was a political decision, and I think, as all currency unions are, and I think it's certainly going to continue for at least the foreseeable future. And I still, though, I have major doubts about the GDP growth rate, but we'll see. We will see. It's about all I can say. I don't want to be repeating myself up too much on that. The UK economy has been struggling, but the UK stock market really has a number of multinational companies, the autonomies that I refer to, and a number of multinational companies, and so the overall outlook, I think, is really quite attractive, but one does need to cherry pick, as always in stock markets. And you have seen Owen's periodic reviews of sectors within the not just the UK, of course, but within the global economy. And we will continue to produce those, of course. But one of our favorite categories all along in recent years has been the dividend aristocrats and also the global autonomies, and many of the dividend aristocrats qualify as autonomies. So they remain extremely extremely interesting overall. And I don't think that will all change. Sorry, I was just trying to signal the vacuum cleaner. It was moving in my direction. My point I was making was that the autonomies and the dividend aristocrats remain favorite sectors here at Fuller Money, subject to the price action. And I would keep a close eye on that overall. I should also mention the technology sector, which has been so interesting, and we've seen some within the U.S. stock market. The NASDAQ has been the best overall performer, NASDAQ 100, which has a high proportion of tech companies in it over the last few years, although it's underperformed here over the last few months, largely because of the change in Apple's fortunes. And as you know, Apple actually hit a high in September 2012 near 705. It was a classic big overacceleration to the upside, big overacceleration relative to its rising 200-day moving average. And the share hit a new reaction low here today of 432. And it was, in doing so, it was breaking down out of a range. So Apple is still within an overall downward trend here. And I mention this really to emphasize a point that while technology is incredibly exciting and we see extraordinary profit growth by the successful companies, but we also see dramatic reversals when they fall behind because the pace of innovation within the technology sector is so rapid that today's hero can be tomorrow's serial underperformer, and we've seen that with a good many sectors, a good many companies within the technology sector over the last several years, and I think that will continue to be the case over the medium to longer term future. So it's a sector that has to be managed in one's portfolio, and it has those rewards are matched by equal size risks overall. So for the most conservative investors, I would say that the best way to play technology is in the companies that benefit the most from it. And I think we're going to see fascinating developments. I know we're going to see fascinating developments in the months and years ahead. I've described technology as being in an accelerated rate of overall development, and that's been a gradual process for the most part, but it is increasing, and all you have to do is look throughout your lifetime at product development and the changes that have actually occurred and the speed with which those changes have actually occurred. And it is certainly increasing, and there's no reason why that comes to an end for technological reasons, although all things, so nothing goes on in perpetuity. Here, but the point I'm trying to make is that I think that in terms of technological innovation, that this field will go on developing almost beyond the pace of our imaginations, and it'll be some exogenous event that eventually dents that rate of advance. And those, fortunately, are not all that common, at least not really serious ones, and so hopefully we will avoid anything like that for really quite some time. But what I wanted to mention was a term used by an Italian scientist. His name eludes me at the moment, but he works for General Electric, a very senior position at General Electric, and I posted a report paper by him on the industrialization of the internet, and it talks about the manufacture of these tiny little sensors, these smart little sensors that they can embed in the various sections of particularly in anything. There are a lot of them in mobile phones, for instance, but that they will increasingly be embedding in various different sections of large, complex machines. Now, that's a fantastic development, innovation for the big manufacturing companies, because what the sensors do is give you constant updates on overall performance, and so they can warn of stress within the engine, which then can be shut down temporarily and fixed at little cost. But even more importantly, that's important enough, something like the airline industry. But even more importantly, they will provide very important feedback on the efficiency of each component section within some of these large, complex machines. And that will lead to a faster rate of innovation, and in other words, making just better and more efficient and more reliable machines in the years ahead. And that's an extremely exciting prospect. So this is one of the great bull market stories overall, but if not the greatest of the bull market stories. But I feel that the safest way to play it is with the companies that are the major beneficiaries of the technology, rather than actually competing to manufacture the technology. And these are themes that Fuller Money has talked about a lot, and will continue to talk about on a regular basis. Okay, let's look now at the global bond, government bond market here. And as we are still, as Owen and I feel, we're still in a period of stock market reaction and overall consolidation, and that we will see continued ranging activity and some additional downside moves. That's supportive of the government bond markets. Now, they've just gone through contract changes, so it's better to look, instead of looking at the futures prices, it's better to look at the yields. But the yields have dipped, and I think that we may well see them dip a little bit lower. This does not represent a change in thinking in terms of my view overall, or Fuller Money's view overall on the bond markets. I feel that these are up in a bubble territory. I've said this on a number of occasions. That doesn't mean that the bubble has burst yet, or that the bubble is about to burst. I'm not saying that, not least because of all the quantitative easing that we're actually seeing, and I think that process will continue. Mr. Bernanke at the Fed has gone well out of his way to emphasize that it's likely to continue. We had a similar comment from Mario Draghi from the ECB. We do not have sufficiently strong global GDP growth to see a move away from quantitative easing. Japan is certainly going to continue with the process. So this is going to ensure, I think, that we have for at least a good many more months, and I think pretty well probably for the rest of this year and quite possibly beyond, that we will see an environment where interest rates remain low, and also an environment where there is plenty of liquidity sloshing around. Now, for the most part, that will be bullish for stock markets. And I think participation in stock markets is the best way to take advantage of that very, very considerable liquidity stimulus. But right now, as I've said, we're in this reaction and consolidation phase, which will range from very small reactions and possibly no reactions for some markets and sectors, to some quite sharp reactions, as we've already seen for those that are currently out of favor. Now, while we are in those reaction and consolidation phases for stock markets, bonds will firm up in terms of their actual bond price, meaning that the yields will dip down somewhat. And we're in one of those environments right now. And I think it's likely to persist for a few more weeks. Personally, I'd be surprised if we saw bond yields move to new lows for any of the major economies, and particularly for the United States. But we can see the move back closer to those lows than we've seen for the last few months. Now, looking at currencies, I think there are three interesting stories here. The first one is that the UK is clearly engaged in another, well, I'll call it what the government officials don't wish to call it, is a competitive devaluation here. The UK needs and feels it should have and is going to have a softer currency. So sterling is weak right now, and I think that may well persist for a while longer. At the opposite side of the spectrum, we have dollar strength. Now, I don't think this is fully justified by the U.S. economic performance, but we have seen the U.S. dollar treated as a safe haven whenever investors become a little bit more nervous about what stock markets are actually doing. And as we're in, best case, a so-called healthy reaction and consolidation, but what we know for some of the economies that investors feel less secure about, we will see genuine stock market corrections, and when that makes investors more wary, then we do see a safe haven retreat into the highly liquid U.S. dollar. And that's been taking place in recent weeks, and I don't think that process is over. Incidentally, I think this corrective process is likely to last for stock market is likely to last for at least a few more weeks. Now, the most interesting currency situation, I think, overall is the Japanese yen, which I've already covered in terms of my forecast, so I don't need to repeat any of that. And moving on to commodities, the CCI, it's a cumulative commodity index. I'm just going to bring that up. And it's had a sharp drop in here today, and I'll explain that again today. But the continuous commodity index has really been ranging lower since the peak that it had seen in the latter part of 2010 and then slightly exceeded in the first half of 2011. Now, if you want to look at that chart, that's the code for it is CCI and then index. And it's been ranging lower since really within that pattern. We had a big rally starting in the second quarter of 2012 when it rallied from 500 back up to 600. But subsequently, it's been drifting down. And there's good news and bad news and all that. In the good news area, energy prices have come back down. Now, the WTI crude, as I speak, is down at 90.87. Looked, it got down to 90.04 at one stage today. And it's looking a little bit oversold in the short term, but that's a considerable improvement in terms of where it was a few weeks ago. And then the more important currency by far, because the WTI really applies almost entirely to the United States, but the Brent crude was trading up at 119 really in the first half of February, and it's come down and actually dipped briefly below 110 here today, and again looks a little bit overextended in the short term. But the bottom line here is that we've seen the commodity price inflation risk diminish here, and particularly we've seen the crude oil price inflation risk reduced in the last few weeks. So my big fear, for veteran subscribers will know that my big fear when the economy, global economy, shows signs of improvement, and I should emphasize that it's only showing tentative signs of improvement here right now. But my big fear is that for various reasons that we get a squeeze upwards on commodity prices. And that'll be because demand increases, but also it will occur because a lot of speculative activity can move into those markets, as we saw back in 2007 and in the early part of 2008. The consequences of that we will all recall. So commodity price inflation is not a problem at the moment. Crude oil is not cheap overall, and I've described this as being the second of two difficult decades in terms of energy prices overall. But my long-term forecast has been very much that as shale oil and gas was utilized more widely around the globe, and so far only the United States and to a lesser extent Canada have been extensive users of this methodology, oil supply would remain generally tight. But the important point here right now is that having seen a look at the higher side of the range that's persisted really since 2012, and we've seen oil prices ease backwards in recent weeks, and so that's good news in terms of overall global energy costs. Now, we've also seen a generally easier environment for grain and bean prices, staple grains and beans. There are some reasons for hoping that we may get a more normal crop cycle in 2013. Now we're only in the third and entering the third month of 2013, so we certainly don't know what the weather conditions are going to be like throughout this year, but What has occurred is that the South American soybean and corn crops have been doing reasonably well overall, and one of the driest areas of the United States around Texas, grain regions, has received some much needed and overdue moisture in some of those big storms recently. So, it's still a tight situation in terms of global supplies, not that much surplus grain available, but we haven't got any new disasters at this time. That's probably the most reasonable way to put it at this stage. The overall trend of global commodities may mean that global GDP growth is going to disappoint in terms of what people were hoping from earlier this year. And that is a possibility overall. But in terms of, particularly regarding demand for metals and industrial metals in particular, as far as food prices are concerned, the key variable is always weather. Consumption of food prices increases overall from year to year. It very rarely changes. But the production side is much more volatile. And in 2013, we need a more benign growing season environment generally. We're overdue for that. Let's see if it actually happens. The softness of industrial metals, and they had been rising steadily for a number of months, or ranging higher for a number of months, but have fallen back quite sharply in recent weeks. And that may be a short-term warning in terms of global GDP growth. And on that note, I'll finish this audio and just say all the best to all of you, and have a terrific weekend.